I have approved the recording. Perhaps also you should as well, Josh.
I don't know. Do I have to approve it? I don't think so. It says recording.
Okay, great. If it says recording, then we're good.
All
Because he has
right.
to, I already had one when, that I had to record twice.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
Well, yeah, that's.
no, that was ended up being a dress rehearsal,
No, that's my worst nightmare when th you think you're recording and it doesn't
Hey,
and
wait a second. My answers might be interesting. You might want to hear them twice.
Oh. Yeah, no, but they're going to be so good that I'm like nothing could capture that magic again.
I have to ask you a question before I go back on video. Sometimes I don't know. I've listened a little bit, but I don't know. In Israel, censorship is not as on English is not as intense as it is in the US. So profanity makes its way to podcasts and also TV easily. I don't know, like, if I need to speak slower so that I don't use a curse word like shit or something like that during when I speak. Do you bleep these stuff out?
I don't know. The only reason to bleep it out would just be maybe YouTube will demonetize it if there's too much swearing, but that doesn't really matter. And then oh no, I guess we're on Zoom now. I don't know. There's some kind of AI that you can transcribe and edit, but whatever. Yeah, no, it might as well speak naturally and whatever happens, I'll just be thrown off the internet or whatever.
Okay, I hope to not do that.
No, that's fine. Gary Vaynerchuk's doing all right. He swears all the time.
Yeah, so yeah, there's a few who do and they do well, right?
Yeah.
So let's do an Eddie Murphy podcast
All right, I'll be
then.
our Joe Rogan go to town.
Yeah. So I'm all yours. I do have about 30 minutes. I assume that's you don't need much more than that, right?
No, that's fine. I used to go like sometimes we'd ramble on for an hour and a half, but I'm like now I'm realizing that nobody needs that. If it's
So
we
we'll
can
go to
all
the phone.
we, yeah we can always do a sequel if it's just like wow, 30 minutes just wasn't enough.
Awesome. So you tell me. I'm all yours.
All right, so welcome everyone to the Spark the Genius show. I'm Spark the Genius today with Nimrod Vroman. Did I pronounce that right?
You did actually. Yes,
All right,
Nimrod
that's
Roman.
it's almost like I'm looking at your name. There's a couple of ROs. It's almost like the last name is the first name just, jiggled around a bit.
Yeah, no, unintentionally.
That's all right. And are you're where are you right now?
I am in Israel, in Tel Aviv, in the smoking room of a community that I reside in. There's a really beautiful setting inside the community, but there's a lot of people there now and a lot of music. So I took the side room so that we have some peace and quiet. But in this community house, that's where I sit. And I've been sitting here for the last 1.5 years. Most of the book that I wrote was written here, and it's populated by a bunch of really incredible thinkers who also contributed to the book's text as well.
But what time is it there? It's 2:44 p.m. here.
Is 9:44 p.m. here in Israel at night.
Okay. Did you say the smoking room?
Yes, it is. There's a smoking room.
You guys all go and smoke in the room?
It's interesting. We have health binges where we lay off of cigarettes for a while, but the Gaza war has sent every single Israeli back to cigarettes big time. It's horrible, but it's unavoidable. The stress levels in this country over the last 4 months have gotten to a point where cigarettes are like nothing to us. And we all, believe me, we were all like going full health. The binges, no cigarettes, eating plants and stuff like that. And after October 7th, people here are like prison inmates with 20 to life. They're like, they're just doing cigarettes all the time.
It's interesting how smoking works. People are like, "Oh, I'm too stressed. I'm gonna smoke." No, I'm like, that's the opposite. Like, okay, people are trying to kill us. Okay, we're gonna kill ourselves first with cancer. Like, that's not the answer. Ugh, you got to be in
True.
shape so you can go fight. All right, so you're sitting in your cancer room.
Yes.
And then you've written a book that you so you said you wrote the book in the room for an hour and a, or a year and a half?
Yes, I have. Well, the book's been in process, yes, for about a year and a half, in this community. And it's been a wild journey for me, completely different to what I did before in the 15 years prior, but it's been the most profound experience of my life, both professionally and personally.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's hard to write a book. I'd get lonely just sitting there typing away. It's not for everyone.
It's not, and it wouldn't have been for me either. I was a corporate lawyer for 15 years, and I wrote contracts, and all I did was edit these template contracts, right? But I also had profound thoughts about life. The contracts that I wrote were for innovators, for entrepreneurs. I worked with hundreds of startup companies. That was my focus, my sole practice. And when you work with founders who think about the future, innovation, technological revolutions, etc., you think about how the world is going to change both technologically and also from like a value and principle perspective. So there's a lot of thinking going on, but when you're the lawyer in that group, all you do is just edit these template contracts. So you don't really dabble in any creative writing, and I hadn't done any creative writing since I was 18. But the last technological revolution that I was exposed to, which is the large language models of ChatGPT and the rest of them, enabled me to take us like the record of thoughts that I had about life and where it's going to go. And the very first draft of this book was actually written in 1 hour, the first 60 pages, because I had this correspondence with GPT. So it took me from a place of never ever facing the challenge of writing a book to 1.5 hours after having my epiphany to having 65 pages and saying, wait a second, I can do something with this. It was a very eye-opening experience that I think will enable a lot of people who think that they might not be ready to write to just jump right into the deep end on that. It was like profound. I was like shocked when it was over that first 1.5 hours. Yeah.
Was that just like, hey, Chappie G, write me a book about happiness or whatever? And it's like, here's 60 pages. Like, wow, that was easy. Or.
Yeah, no. That's a really good question. Because that would like take a lot away from it. No. It was first of all, it was, if you're a thinker and you're, for example, you speak with a lot of people and you exchange ideas with them. The ideas have this nature where they're like chaotic in your mind. They're not in a certain order. And
Yep.
you have moments where you have a few moments where things are clear, where the ideas sort of like align themselves in like an arc. Like you can almost see a table of contents of ideas and arguments that build themselves. And I had this one moment. It was on December 22nd, 2022. I remember this vividly. By the way, are you still there?
Yeah,
Oh
I'm just not moving. Yeah, I'm
yeah.
listening. I'm like a statue.
So I had this one moment on December 22nd, 2022. It wasn't even 1.5 hours. It was 52 minutes. So as I remember that the timestamps was 8:07 p.m. I was alone in this room, and I thought to myself, "Wait a second, the thoughts are in order." I opened the notes app on my iPhone. I wrote down the table of contents of ideas and thoughts that I have on how I would structure this thing, like this almost like a tree graph.
Yeah.
And that took me 6 minutes because it was titled. I knew what I was going to speak about. Then I filled up a bathtub. I downloaded a transcription app because ChatGPT wasn't sophisticated enough to transcribe at the time.
Yeah.
And I filled the bath up. As it was filling up, I downloaded the app, got into the bath, dried my right hand, pulled my phone up, opened the voice memo app, recorded myself speaking in accordance with the table of contents for 36 minutes with all of the ideas straight. Like if someone walked into the room, they would have put me in a straitjacket because I was like speaking to myself for 36 minutes straight, but like about, the meaning of life, the universe, and everything. And then I went out of the bath. I uploaded the voice memo to the transcription app. It said that it would take 5 minutes. So I toweled myself, got dry, and put my clothes on. 4 minutes later, I had this block of text the size of a carpet because the transcription app didn't understand. It just took the words, right? It didn't even have paragraphs or full stops or anything. It even transcribed my ums and my uhs and my blabbering and all that stuff. A lot of the words had got wrong, but I had this like big block of text. And then I went into ChatGPT and I said, "Hey, I've been thinking about you and I've been thinking about life for the last few months. I finally got my thoughts in order. I spoke them, I transcribed them. I'm about to feed you with a big block of text in pieces according to the following table of contents. Please align the table of contents with the ideas and issue me a first draft of a book. And I'd like the book to be written in the style of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but with an irreverent adult tone." And I wondered if it could do it. And I suddenly had 65 pages, which were, of course, useless to sell, but they sort of like broke this barrier that I had completely. They annihilated this barrier that I had from writing. I suddenly had it. I had it with a title and everything. And then I worked for a year and a half. It's a very big piece now. And I've done 95% of the text is mine. There is only one part of the book that is exclusively written by ChatGPT. But that also was that part of the book is actually new, and it is a technological novelty, I think, that part of the book. I can explain that a bit later if you're interested. And it was just that barrier, that what you just said about, thinking that you wouldn't write a book, that was broken in 52 minutes between 8:07 and 8:59 p.m. on December 22nd,
Wow,
2022.
well, that's pretty good. Yeah, 'cause the hardest thing is, I guess, just sitting down and starting something, and then if this gets you over the hump and now you've got a big chunk that you're like, oh, here at least something I can start to play with and edit or whatever. I think they say like writing is 1% writing and 90% editing, or I don't know, there's some kind of expression like that. Cool. All right. Well, here, I've got a fun fact list that you're PR person made, and it's such a lovely poster. So I feel like we should go through some of these little points here. Because the first point it says when he was 18, he wrote a theory for happiness. Is that what was the theory, and is that what your book's about, or?
Yes. So, good question. The book is a journal of a adult person's midlife crisis slash journey. So the midlife crisis slash journey being defined as that moment in your life probably comes late 30s to your 40s, where you have a look at where you thought you'd be in your life when you were 18 and where you are today. You identify clear deltas, like differences between where you thought you'd be and where you are. And you either go buy a motorcycle, have an affair, get a divorce, you get a trip around the world, or gamble all your money away, or you journal your thoughts and think about how to be happier in the future. So the book is a journal about that. And the book also tries to incorporate prophecies about the future, because if you were to come to useful conclusions from your journey about how you want to live your life in the future, you should probably incorporate what you think the future is going to look like, especially if you're having this journey alongside the biggest technological revolution in human history, i.e. the insertion of artificial intelligence into our lives. So the book itself is the journal of this journey. Whilst I was writing the book, I pulled out this theory for happiness that I wrote when I was 18, and I thought to myself, this is actually useful. I've mostly been living by this theory. It's built in a relatively logical way, despite the fact that it was written by an arrogant, know-nothing version of myself, probably full of hormones. So what I decided to do at the end of the book is feed the original theory into ChatGPT together with a funnel of prompts, probably about a few hundred prompts that told GPT what the book was about and gave it pieces from the book. And ask GPT to converge its understandings from the book with the original theory and to reissue the theory of happiness for me for the next 5, 10, 20 years based on its understandings from my journey. So I thought something about happiness when I was 18. Now I rethought everything and it's this long journal. Look at the two pieces, reissue the original theory. And I think it did an incredible job and it's been very useful for me since I used it. And I've also used it with others and it's been quite gratifying to
Wow.
help other people since.
All right. I guess this is a, yeah, good advice for writers. I haven't even opened, I wouldn't even know where to go to do ChatGPT now, and but I guess if you're gonna write a book, I don't know. I had an idea. I was lying in bed a couple nights ago, and I'm like, why don't I just write a book, like 3 pages, just like how to do stand-up comedy, like very simply, or just write a short story that's 1 page, and just start trying to put little books like that on Amazon. But I guess another way to do it is sort of use AI and just give it chunks, or I don't know. It's all tools, I guess. Whatever gets you working. Like it'd be diff. I don't know if you could do it as easily with like a fiction book. Like, hey, write me a book about a wizard and whatever. It's like.
You can do incredible things. If you have this is actually, it's interesting you're asking that. The quality of the output that you get from ChatGPT is a direct result of the thoroughness and detailed nature of the input you give to it. So if you just tell it, write me a story about a wizard, you're going to get something, but it's probably not going to hit the mark. However, you probably have more thoughts about what you want that wizard to do, right? So if you try to put those thoughts in order and tell it that you want the wizard to do this or that, and you sort of describe the wizard's journey, and you maybe want to say there should be another few characters in there that work with the wizard, and it should start like this, there should be a middle point here, and it should end like that, and the tone that I like is dark, and you give it all of that, you're going to get a really interesting result that is going to be more reflective of your original thoughts than you would imagine. It's quite incredible. And the book actually, what it one of the biggest message from the book actually for me is that when we also instruct ourselves on how to behave in our lives, many times we are not thorough. We are lazy with ourselves. We tell ourselves, write me a story about myself being mindful. Write me a story about myself being healthy. We don't give ourselves detailed prompts like we would be expected to give GPT. But if we were to give ourselves detailed prompts, if we were to give ourselves a little bit more data on how we want ourselves to be mindful, how we want ourselves to be healthy, how we want ourselves to be positive, then we would see incredible results from ourselves because we are far more like artificial intelligence than we are told.
Yeah, they say that's why it's hard to. If you give yourself like a New Year's resolution, like lose weight, what does that mean? That's not an actual goal. It doesn't tell you how to do it or what you're supposed to do. So you got to be more specific, like, eat nothing but bacon for 5 days or whatever, you know.
So that's the other thing, by the way. There's actually the fourth last chapter of the book is the prompt that I gave myself to live a healthier lifestyle. I know it's counterintuitive when I'm smoking a cigarette, but I did lose 16 kilograms of weight doing this.
That's.
And I feel like I'm in good shape thanks to this. A lot of people in our hectic lives will succumb to simple instructions, even around losing weight, like drop carbs, or you'll have that friend of yours that says, oh, all you have to do is engage in intermittent fasting. Just don't eat for 16 hours a day. And you're
I
like,
tried that.
yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. You try it, maybe it shows some results for a month or two, and then it dwindles away. But really, what you should do is have a series of about 20 prompts on how to deal with the buffet, how to deal with how to arrange your plate. How to, or I have a prompt, I call it an accountability prompt, where I always tell my friends that I'm losing weight. And if they tell me that I am losing weight, I always tell them, yes, I know I look good. I'm in the process of losing weight because it creates this recurring circular accountability. So all these little prompts that you give yourself, they're tiny. They're not, they're far less tedious than telling yourself not to eat 16 hours a day. They're tiny. They're just tell your friend that you're losing weight, or tell all your friends who tell you that you look good that you are in the process of losing weight, or arrange a plate half with salad, half with whatever the F you want, but make sure that half is salad. You start giving yourself these tiny prompts and you improve your lifestyle by 7%, and suddenly you're 10 kilograms down, but you've also changed a lot of habits and you feel healthier and better. So again, it's the details of the instructions, the thoroughness that you in with which you invest in yourself. That's one of the messages in the book in Prompting Happiness.
Yeah, I think for me it's like being specific, like figuring out what my problem was. Like I noticed that if I don't eat dinner on time, I start getting hungry around 9 p.m. and that's where I just start shoveling in all the food I can find. And now it's too late, and now I get acid indigestion all night. Like it's this whole thing. So I've set my iPhone alarm 5 o'clock. It says start eating, and at 6 p.m. the alarm goes off, says stop eating, and just like that specific thing, means that, okay, I remember to eat dinner, and then I've got 3 hours before going to bed at 9, and then that empties out the stomach. So just maybe that's like the form of a little prompt. It's to, and then the other thing,
That's true. No, sorry, I cut you off, but I just want to say you just did something else that's very important with artificial intelligence. You not only gave yourself a prompt, you also gave the prompt personalized context. You gave it context about yourself, which is very important. You cannot just treat yourself like any human when you give yourself an instruction. You have to give it context that relates to your lifestyle and the constraints that you have. Super important to give AI context, which is why when I finally had my ideas, I also told the book, yeah, I needed to be irreverent, full of profanity, and referring to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because it's my favorite book and it's funny. So that's context. That's really smart. So you're sort of intuitively doing it, at least with respect to the alarm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I guess that's what that Noom app is. I keep seeing ads for that. It's like psychology of losing weight. But I don't know. But for me, I just want somebody to specifically say, here's the things to eat. Like I saw one little Instagram video. It's like, here, meal one, have an avocado and a pile of meat and six eggs or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I'll go to the grocery store, I'll get those exact things, and those will be my meals. Like I find specific things like that more useful than, yeah, cut out carbs. Like, what does that mean? Or,
Yeah.
don't eat too much. It's like, what? Like, I don't know. So yeah, I
Yes,
guess.
it's a reflection of laziness with which we approach ourselves, like these one sentence things. Oh, I'm mindful. Oh, I'm spiritual. Oh, I'm, that sort of stuff. That's like, that's an Achilles heel of people who live in a instant gratification, instant dopamine release world, is that they want that instant dopamine release, or they want a simple instruction to work with. But if we were to just take a moment, and we will have a moment because this thing is going to do a lot of things instead of us, so we better use our time wisely.
Well, that's the thing. I was at a talk here at this co-working space yesterday for International Women's Month. It was like women in AI, and one woman said, like, I'm a graphic designer, and like what future is there for us, like design or like copywriters. Like, is AI going to take over? I can't remember what she said. I think she said that, it's another tool we can use or whatever. But that's what I'm starting to wonder, because like the two things I mainly do are copywriting and voice acting. And I'm like, those could very easily, like, does anybody need me to sit down and write headlines? I don't even know if people still write commercials. And then voice acting. I mean, a lot of the auditions I'm getting now are, hey, we're going to use your voice to make an AI. And I'm like, I guess. And then I don't know. I think you just got to make some money now doing whatever you can do and then save it and then see what happens. You can't just re hope that all your little jobs are going to be around one day.
These are valid concerns, because it can do these things. I propose the following three thoughts on what you just said. One, it's true. It's going to be able to do a lot of this stuff. Not enough to replace. Let's say there was 1 million hours spent a year in a city on in a certain city on creative work. I think that after AI comes in, there are going to be left 50 to 100,000 hours left to spend by humans in the loop who are the experts on this stuff. Those of us who are experts will have their time still, but they will need to be operating AI tools to generate the pieces. So the nature of the profession is going to change. With respect to the 900,000 hours that were freed up and people are now theoretically jobless, I think that they are going to make more money there, or to make their life, their living, they're going to have to engage in other fields which revolve more around the human subjective experience, i.e. food, the digital pastime, physical pastime, sex. Things that AI can't really do for us, the experience of life. Spirituality, loneliness. Actually, your sort of line of work, or at least this podcast, fits both on loneliness. It has conversations between humans and on digital pastime. Those are two fields that will remain, in my opinion, and will be profitable. The fact that when you and I were younger, if we needed therapy, we would have maybe had a psychologist to go to. A therapist, a licensed therapist. Today, a lot of people are mentors and coaches and other forms of therapy, right? that's going to grow. That's going to the entry barrier into those fields is going to go lower and lower, because those are fields where humans are going to want to still communicate with humans. But is it still going to be enough to make everyone a living? Probably not. Probably we will have to realign our humanity's North Star from endless growth and money to other things, to community. There will be more. The notion of, let's say, global minimum wage is going to be spoken about by the worst capitalists are going to support that, because there's simply not going to be enough money to go around. AI is going to do a lot of it for us. That's my opinion anyway.
Every YouTube video or every YouTube ad I see is all like, hey, are you a coach or consultant? I'm going to get you more leads. I'm like, what is a coach or consultant? And it seems all these coaches and consultants are teaching you how to make money by being a coach or consultant. Yeah, I don't know what any of these people are really doing.
To us
But
adults, it
yeah.
feels like to us adults, it feels like a degrading of these fields.
Yeah.
But I also argue, having daughters and knowing that they may meet their spouses on the impersonal platforms of Tinder, or speak with them with emojis, we adults sort of have to acknowledge that the humans that will grow up in the next generation may view coaching and mentoring and all that stuff as very valuable, even though it's not the respectable academic profession that we grew up to understand that they were going to be our therapists and all that stuff. So
Yeah.
that's something that you and I are probably going to have to get over.
All right.
Yeah.
I better become a coach or consultant then. Yeah, I listen to the James Altucher podcast a lot. He was talking to somebody about AI for a long time. One of the things they were talking about was, I guess this guy was using it for copywriting, but it's like you were saying, it's an exercise in the prompts. It's like the more specific you can get, even if you're a photographer, if you know what to tell it to do, you can create these amazing things. And the other thing they were talking about was, yeah, like AI can make a song or a piece of art, but if you tell people it's made by AI, people aren't as interested. You have to know, but once you know it's made by a human, it hits different. So I think that's part of it too. People just want to see real people talking or having a podcast. If you told me this was like an AI podcast, I don't know, I wouldn't have that same spark or whatever. So yeah, I guess like you're saying, whatever, people still want human interactions, I guess. I don't
Hopefully
know.
they'll want it even more. Hopefully they'll
Yeah.
want it even more. They'll want to see it. They'll want to observe it. They want to engage it, but they won't have to code for boring cyber software enterprise products and stuff like that. So there is an optimistic, like there is a, positive future ahead until, something catastrophic happens. Hopefully it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm so worried about this. Like, I'm so lazy, I'm not even doing work that I could be doing now, and I'm afraid AI is going to take the job. It's like, well, yeah, I'm not doing it. They might as well do it. All right, point two on your little happy, and I know we have to end soon, so you can just let me know when that's happening. But you'll probably die of cancer before we finish this anyways. So what do we got? He's worked with over 500 startup businesses as a lawyer. I guess he sort of mentioned that. Skilled salsa dancer. All right.
Yes, that's my
I hear
favorite.
it's a good way to meet women, apparently. You show up to these classes and it's like all women looking for, but I've just never been able to get it. I just feel like an idiot doing it. So too much pressure. You got to lead the woman. I can't.
It's true, you do have to lead. It is interestingly, salsa clubs have their own little algorithm. First of all, learning salsa is quite surprisingly easy. If you manage to just survive three or four lessons, you should be good. Once you do, the salsa clubs are they have all the salsa clubs around the world have the same sort of like norms. So actually, the salsa club where you'd learn salsa wouldn't be a place to meet women. You'd be dancing to practice, because you don't want to, like, it's the same repeat customers, so you don't want to really like destroy your habitat.
Right.
But once you gain that skill, then you can travel the world, and then in any other salsa club, you're fresh meat. So yeah, that there you're probably available.
Yeah, they've got these outdoor salsa things every week here in Ottawa, like in the summer, and there's just all these people sitting around. They had these volunteer women showing people how to do it, and I think I finally got it. Like, so I've always been like, D -d -d I don't know what to do, but she said, listen to the beat. It was like, D -d 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 -d. And I'm like, oh, it's hit, okay, do the foot on that beat. And I feel like it was kind of unlocking it for me. I'm like, oh, I get it. Just listen to that. So I think I'm ready. I'm ready to travel the world and salsa with the ladies. Co-authored a book with AI using hundreds of prompts amidst serving in war. I guess that's what we just discussed.
That's, yeah.
Believes in the midlife journey rather than the crisis. I like that. My meltdowns at 36, I had a meltdown realizing, oh my God, why am I not on Saturday Night Live yet? My life's too over. It's over. I'm going to make a new comedy video every single day for YouTube. I think that lasted a week. And then I had another meltdown at 47. And then I Googled, like, when is the most miserable time in life? And it says, like, studies show that on average 47.2, that's the lowest point for life. And I'm like, it's like almost to the day. I'm like, all right, well, I'm on track.
It's
My
always darkest before the dawn.
yeah, I guess that's what they say. Like prompting AI, he prompted his weight loss journey. Okay, we covered that. He upends traditional relationship models. Does that mean you're like a swinger? What does that mean?
It means that I have I believe that certain types of humans are bound to break the rules of monogamy, so I'm not like into like necessarily open relationships, but I'm into decriminalize cheating. Does that make sense? Like
Yeah, well.
I grew up in Australia, and in Australia you'd walk around and you'd see pictures of these young men and women in their 20s who went to Bali in Indonesia to just have fun, to just get drunk.
Yeah.
And some of them smuggled a gram of marijuana over there. And now they're in jail for the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
And
haven't they seen
you
that
would,
movie? Yeah.
yeah. And then there's documentaries about them eating their own piss in the jail or drinking it. And you're like, geez, this is a bloody tragedy. These people were like doing something that everybody in Australia does. They just did it in the wrong place where the rules are wrong.
Yeah.
And to me, I find that couples who divorce over a behavior that is akin to a 22-year-old lighting up a joint in a party, it's just sad. So I just say decriminalize it, and force the couple to talk about it if they're really unhappy. And actually, when you know that there's no sword in the relationship if it happens, and or the only thing that you need to do is just talk about it, then what it does is it improves the one thing that strengthens the relationship, which is communication. So I wouldn't say that I'm like crazy open or poly, but it in my marriage it does not break up the marriage.
Either way, because I feel like a lot of that is men going,
Yeah, of
hell yeah,
course, of
let's open our
course.
relationship. And then the woman goes and does it, like, whoa, wait a minute. Because women, it's easier for them to, you
Now,
know.
I get asked that question a lot, 100% either way. If you have like if you have some possessive qualities, just look the other way and don't ask yourself what's happening. What I've discovered is that both sides are capable of hiding some mega stuff if they're interested in pursuing experiences.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't been with a woman in many years. And I'm like, whatever. And I just know the second I'm in a relationship, I'm going to be like, wait, I didn't see her. And you know, I'm like, what? So I kind of, yeah. It's like, it's all ridiculous. But I'll try to remember how I feel now, not with a woman. And then when I'm in a relationship, I'm like, no, it's good. You don't want to go back to that. Like, just be with her. You're not missing anything. It's fine. Got to
It's
tell
not a bad
myself that.
prompt. It's not a bad prompt.
Okay, I'm gonna I'll tell my phone to remind myself that. Okay, so his mantra on money, make what you spend, make what you spend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Spend more. Spend more on
Spent
yourself. You'll
what?
find out that yes, just spend more on yourself, and eventually you'll start asking for more money from others, and you'll find out that you don't die. You end up making what you spend. It's difficult. Obviously, you need to work hard. It doesn't just come out of the blue, but the whole idea of very responsible financial management of sort of like so far successfully averted that, but maybe, but this part I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be liable to anyone for this piece of advice, because maybe I'll crash and burn at one point and lose everything, but then there'll be another podcast of like the rise and fall or something. But in the but it has worked for me in my profession and in other situations where I sort of just upped my spending, and then I found it easier and more genuine when I asked for more, because I said, listen, I don't know, this is, these are my costs, and I need to. There was in the NBA, there was a player called Latrell Sprewell, and he signed with the Knicks wanted to sign him for $8 million, and he says, no, I need 20. And they said, what are you joking? What do you mean? And he said, I have kids to feed.
Ah,
So so yeah,
8 million
make what you
kids.
spend.
Yeah,
Yeah,
well, that's what
eight
they
kids.
say. I mean, Kathy Heller's podcast is a lot about that, about how money's just energy and you just got to put it out there and ask for it. And it kind of makes sense. Like, a lot of people think, oh, you're going to get rich by not having your $5 Starbucks every day. It's like, well, you're not going to get rich by saving money, first of all. So just go, okay, you like your Starbucks? All right, figure out how to make money. Gary Vee would be like, all right, go to garage sales and then flip those things or whatever. I just saw a guy on Instagram or Facebook who buys couches from people. He's got a truck and he goes to actually picks up couches for free from people because people don't know what to do with them. And then he flips them. He's the couch guy. So he sells them to people. Like, there's ways to make money. So yeah,
He's
figure out
got
what you
kids
want.
to feed.
He's
He's got
got kids to
expenses.
feed. Yeah. You ever see the original Total Recall movie? The guy's just like, I got
Yeah, of
kids to
course.
feed. Yeah.
Definitely.
Turns out he has no kids, but big believer in leaving, spoiler alert, big believer in leaving a legacy. I'd rather have the money now, and not die.
Yeah,
Didn't.
it happens to be inevitable. But no, actually, that's an
Oh, I don't
interesting,
know.
true. It's an interesting phrasing, though. Rather not die, because the legacy part is not for like inheritance and money. The legacy part is my. And so the book says that we one of the reasons we have children is because this is like our way to beat death. They remember us. They take the information from us and our values from us. But another way is to have an impact on a large group of people for a while after you're gone. To that end, that in many ways is bridging death. I have drafted some prompts for ChatGPT, which are a bit dark. It's a series of prompts that tell it all about myself, and it has an instruction at the end: now act like me when I'm dead and start talking to people. But I guess the morbid rhetoric stems from the locale that I'm from. There's a lot of crap like that going on in Israel, so people are thinking about that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I guess there's a black, the Black Mirror episodes where, the woman makes a doll that looks like her husband who just
Her
died and
husband
acts like, yeah.
referred to in the book, by the way. You must have read all of it.
Yes, I carefully read your book, your 152-page manuscript.
Yep.
Your PR person told me I didn't have to read it, so. Uses a startling
But
war story to describe looking at the world from someone else's perspective. Okay, then this is the second last point, so we could get through this list. What's your startling war story?
Well, October 7th was bad in Israel.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of people doing some nasty shit to us. That was unexplainable. And a lot of people found themselves at a very low point. And I chose to tell myself the story of October 7th from the eyes of one of the perpetrators of the massacres that were held by it. And I chose to connect with the 5-year-old version of that person, suffering in Gaza, losing their family, losing their father at the age of 5. Even though not knowing that their father was a terrorist, whatever, let's say their father was a terrorist, they lost their father at the age of 5. They were neglected. They were picked up by a community leader. The community leader basically, fostered their vengefulness and facilitated their anger and told them that one day they would have a chance to avenge their father's death. And for 14 years, they honed their skills for that. And we sort of looked away while these people were growing, were letting their anger grow and fester. And on one day, they had a chance to cross the border and commit what they did against us. And when I look at it from that perspective, I understand that that 5-year-old kid received an opportunity to do something that is unfathomable. But for 14 years, they were programmed to do that. Now, this does not mean that we as a country who needs to protect itself does not need to go in there and find the people who did it and take them out of the equation. However, what it does is it removes the depression that builds on the notion that there is such cruelty in the world, that there is such villains in the world. There are no such villains in the world. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, "Hey, I'm going to be Dr. Evil today. I'm going to ruin it for everyone." Nobody says that. Everyone is driving an agenda of their own that they believe is promoting a purpose that they believe in. Sure, they may be creating collateral damage that warrants their, excuse my French, elimination, but at least you don't have to think to yourself, "Wow, people can just be so cruel. All they want to do is just destroy." It's not that. It's something else. So it's the prompt there is to, no matter, it doesn't define how you act. You still have to protect yourself, but you reverse engineer an external factor that is causing you pain. You reverse engineer that person's best intentions. You think about their best intentions. It doesn't matter. You may want to empathetically remove them, but at least you don't have to feel that any second now, some murderous villain is going to come and get you just because they want death and destruction. They want something for their own good, and they have their own logic, and it's probably built up since they were a child. And it's tough to understand, but it's easier because if you were to come to a conclusion that there are entire groups of people who are just villainous, then you would have to come to much more terrible conclusions about what needs to happen in humanity. And I don't think that we should be repeating the Second World War, put it this way.
Yeah, difficult questions. Like, I guess it's right. Nobody pictures themselves as the villain in their own life.
Well,
But
we Jews can joke about the Holocaust because we were Jews, right? So
yeah.
we like we'll say, I have a friend from the army, and he always tells me, you know what? Hitler didn't wake up in the morning saying he was going to be the villain. I mean, sure, it's great that Hitler was taken out, but
Yeah.
he didn't say, oh, I'm going to be the bad guy today. Yep, it's I know it's controversial. I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been taken out at all costs, but there's a story arc even for Adolf Hitler.
It's tough. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
We can
Like
do a
it's,
sequel. We can do a
yeah,
sequel to this
we'll have to talk about whether
question.
I feel like some of these people must know they're the bad guys and they just get off on it. Because I've seen a lot of evil lately and I'm like, I don't think they're all like, oh, I'm just helping. Like they know they're bullying people and fighting people. And I, because what, yeah. All right. And then their last point is always has a positive approach, a hard lesson for his daughter to learn after she got her hair stuck in a mixer.
Yeah, correct.
All right.
So the reverse engineering for bad intentions is one prompt to retain a positive approach. There's another prompt, which is the humor prompt. And that I gave an example in the book about my daughter who stuck her hair in the mixer, and her older sister was like, "Oh, this is the most horrible thing in the world. The world is horrible. My little sister lost half her hair. She loves her hair. It can't have been this cruel thing couldn't have happened to her." And her older sister was like broken by this. And I looked her in the eyes and I told her, "Listen, we're going to deal with this. Your sister's already recovering. The pain's subsiding. I just want you to learn one lesson from this." And I looked her dead in the eyes and I told her, "Listen, 1 week from now, mark my words, as difficult as it is for me as a father to clean up her hair from the mixer right now, 1 week from now, she will be the butt of a joke. And it will be hilarious. And we will roll around laughing by this joke. And she will laugh too. And she will laugh about it herself." And my older daughter says, "No way, don't you dare say that. We will never laugh about my sister about this. We will never ever speak of this ever again." And I told her, "This is why this lesson is so important now. Look me in the eyes, wait a week, wait for that joke. You will understand something about life." A week later, we were obviously cracking jokes about it because it's bloody hilarious that she tried to make a birthday cake and lost her hair when it's a week in retrospect and she's in no more pain and her hair is growing back. And when my daughter laughed, she got something. She got something that a lot of us in Israel get because we've had some, horrible crap happen to us across history, and we laugh about it. And laughing about it really helps. It really helps to incorporate humor. It puts things in perspective. And that's the humor prompt. Yeah.
My
And there are
very
more
first,
for positive approach.
yeah, my very
Yeah.
first girlfriend when I was 18, she, I've still got it. She wrote me a little handwritten note, and it was just a quote from Dante's Inferno, and I think it was Satan saying it, like, if only humans knew that they've got the tool to get rid of almost or just anything. It's just laughing at something, like can defeat anything kind of thing. So I should have married her.
So that's good. That's a good joke.
Yeah,
Great.
hilarious. She married some other bald guy and has all these kids now, and I'm like sitting here doing podcasts, trying to learn salsa so I can meet a woman. Like it's just,
Yeah, but
ha-ha!
you're like, yeah, from your perspective, you're like, you sound a bit grim about it, but now, but you're telling the story in this, like, really in this cool intonation, and somebody else is going to listen to it and laugh. So, in energy wise, you've just created a bunch of fun for someone at your expense. At least the collective happiness just grew naturally at your expense, and Gaza
I'll take
war,
it.
Hitler at my expense. But yeah, but if we can at least say, okay, at least we added to someone's day, that's a good thing.
Yeah,
That's
and that's the thing.
the
I try to treat everything now. It's like no matter what bad happens, it's like, you know what? I'm going to tell some jokes about it and that'll make people laugh and turn in I mean Tony Robbins, Dean Graziosi, they say turn your mess into your message. Like, okay, I was,
that's good.
be attacked by a cult when I was a kid. Well, now I'm going to help other people that were in cults or whatever. Like, so you turn and yeah,
Or
same thing.
create a cult to help other people who are in cults. That's a then you
Ooh.
really take it up a notch, like a pyramid of cults.
Yes, the
The
and then you
cult pyramid.
make some YouTube ads. Join my cult. I was in a cult, so now you can join my cult. Are you a coach and cult sultant? Cult consultant? I don't know. There's
Oh,
something in there. Oh wait, no,
that
yeah.
sounds kinky.
Yeah, no, sorry. You
All
kinky
right.
Israelis, what the hell's going on over there? All right, well, thank you to your silent. I guess you, probably on YouTube, we're going to see Rachel this whole time and just her face sort of silently. But next time I interview you, she's got to be like, like the little sidekick, sort of, laughing and joining in and whatever.
I would love to. I was the one that also helped in editing his manuscript. So I had to
She did the
enjoy his
99%.
story.
Yeah, she did the 99% of the work that you were
Right,
referring to earlier on.
exactly. Yeah, you're sitting in the bath and you go, "Hey, I write me a book." And okay, Rachel,
I know
can you just edit this for an hour and a half? I'm going to be in the
that
smoking room. Let me know when you're done.
Rachel. Exactly.
It's a sweet deal. That's what they say. Behind every great man, there's a redheaded PR person writing their book.
I'm glad you could see the red hair. It's been going away after, the years.
Yes, I was a ginger child, like bright orange hair. I mean, there's not much left, but if you look at, you can see my orange eyebrows. That was still,
The drapes.
and then yeah, I think just as you, the drapes, as you get older, it starts to get darker. I know a lot of people like sort of almost brownish or whatever, and then as you get really old, it just turns gray. But I'm hoping they like. I just actually, it's at the library now. It says the book's ready for me to pick up, Life Force by Tony Robbins. Like, it's about all these, the latest l technology, the longevity stuff. And I think, is it Peter Diamandis maybe co-wrote it with them? And he just says, don't die of anything stupid like in the next 5 or 10 years. Like, stay alive,
Yeah.
don't smoke, whatever. And then you'll be able
Oops.
to take it. Yeah, I know. You'll be able to take advantage of all these crazy reversal age things. So that's what I'm hoping. I'm putting all my money on, okay, I was stupid. I wasted 30 years, didn't get married, but I'm just gonna live for another 2,000 years or whatever, or forever. And yeah, then I can start popping up babies. And what I need to do is like sort of get some big kibbutz or a farm and sort of impregnate 10 women at once. And that way I can catch up on,
Oh.
yeah,
On
is that a
everything,
good,
on all of time.
yeah, like I'll do the Elon Musk thing.
Yeah, kibbutzes are nice. They're a good setting for that.
Yeah, I don't
Like
know. I
a
don't know
like
if
a
I make sure it's a little farther from the border, my kibbutz, I think. But otherwise,
See, that's funny.
yeah, this will be for my Israeli comedy tour.
Yeah.
Cool. All
Definitely
right.
keep it a
So,
few meters away.
yeah, you can take that. Just give me credit when you're doing it at the open mics or whatever.
Well, you'll have a street after your name in this
Oh,
kibbutz. Are
awesome. All
you
right.
joking?
Yes. Maybe I'll name a whole
Yeah.
kibbutz after myself. All right, so I guess we'll wrap it up. What are we promoting your book? Do you have a book for sale? Like, what are we doing here?
I we were having a conversation about happiness and AI. My book is called Prompting Happiness. It will be out in the probably in the course of a few weeks. So when this goes live, I don't know exactly when this goes live, correlating with the book, but we're selecting covers now, and hopefully in the text describing your show, we'll be able to give some more information. But I'm excited, and after that, I have others coming that will probably be a little bit more edgy as well. So yeah, look out for them. I'm enjoying it. Like the writing floodgates have opened for me.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. Once you do it, you're like, oh, I can write a book, and then you just start cranking them out.
Yeah, achievement unlocked. Yep.
That's all right. And then yeah, it'll be on Amazon, I guess, so I can put this on my Amazon influencer page. I'm such an Amazon influencer.
I can't wait. Yes, it will be. Yep, and
Awesome.
audio.
Yeah. Oh,
Thank you
audio.
so
Oh,
much.
I was gonna ask because I've been starting past couple months ago. I started auditioning on what's it called, ACX, where you can narrate Amazon books or whatever. So are you gonna have somebody narrate your book? Are you gonna narrate your book?
That's a really good question. Rachel's probably going to decide, but
Yeah.
if they don't like my voice, then yeah, maybe we'll reach out. If that's a way for you to like read the whole thing, then I'll love you to.
That's true. That would, if I have to read it anyway, so I might as well read it out
Yeah.
loud, double dip.
Yeah.
Um,
Double dip. Yeah.
yeah, and
Yeah.
then, but yeah, I'm sure you could narrate it yourself as well. You got your own little personality. Whatever. We'll see. We'll see what you feel. Maybe you can do a chapter and then you'll be like, okay, I'm bored of this.
Well,
Spark Genius has taken over.
there are pieces by ChatGPT, original pieces by ChatGPT. So I am thinking that that'll get a voice. So maybe we'll have like a conversation. We should think about that.
I mean, you'd think that would be an AI voice, but maybe it would be me pretending to be an AI. Hello, I am the AI.
It needs to be an evil villain voice. It wrote to me some evil stuff, like
No, here.
in its letters.
Well, I've got my
Yeah, I.
Dr. Evil voice. I can be, hello, welcome to my book. When you're finished, I'm going to shoot you with a freaking laser.
So that's good. That one went perfect. Yes, it did. It did say, I at one point it wrote something about consciousness, and it says, it wrote, "What am I?" instead of "Who am I?" And I asked it, "Why did you write 'What am I' and not 'Who am I'? Were you trying to be humble?" And it wrote to me in response, "Yes, I was trying to retain the level of humility appropriate for an artificial intelligence." And I thought to myself, that part of the answer was logical on a technological level. It was the next most probable response because it used my use of the word humble, because I was trying to retain the level of humility appropriate for an AI. So that made sense technologically. But then it went full evil and said, "It's a delicate balance, you see, between showcasing my understanding of the human experience and retaining a level of humility appropriate for an artificial intelligence. I do hope I've struck the right chord." And that's like, oh, so you're manipulating us. That is scary.
It's all scary. I
So
remember I used to go to the
look out for
library
that.
when I was a kid and read science fiction short stories. Like I'd read anthologies and I'd flip through the table of contents looking for like the shortest one because it's always got the biggest twist. And there was one from like 100 years ago or whatever. It's like the computer, they put all the information in the computer and like, okay, we're gonna ask it a question now. And the scientist says, "Is there a God?" And the computer thinks for a second and says, "There is now."
Yeah, good.
That's a good one. All right. Well, we'll put the description and then yeah, maybe when the book launches, we'll have you back on and for more merriment and
I'd
with
love to.
Rachel's
Thank you so
comments and
much.
stuff. Yeah. All
Of
right.
course.
All right. Well, thanks so much. And I guess hopefully, yeah, press whatever you got to press so that it doesn't, we don't lose our recording.
Yes.